Hello, welcome to Music Weekly. I'm Rosie Swash, sitting in while Paul McInnes is away. And coming up on this week's show, we ask those big life questions with the ever-curious Flaming Lips frontman Wayne Coyne. There's new music from Leaky Lee, Hot Chip and Solange Knowles on Singles Club. We chat to Scottish folks' Frightened Rabbit, who also play us their lovely new single. And David Gough is back in a feature with no name. He tells us all about 90s alt-rock group Morphine. Now, as I'm taking Paul's place this week, Rebecca Nicholson takes mine. So I'm here to introduce you to the pod. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We had a wee chat yesterday after you came over to show me the new Rihanna album.
Yes.
So for people that haven't seen the actual album, yes, the back cover is what drew my attention, with Rihanna wearing some pants. Some pants.
From what I remember, it was a kind of mucky fur jacket, wasn't it? Fur coat.
So we were both equally appalled by this, but other people that I've told about it have said, what's the big deal? Isn't that just what female pop stars do? So why was it this particular image, do you think?
Well, it's slightly different, isn't it? Because she's not just standing there in her pants. She looks like she's been through quite an ordeal.
Yeah, she... Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a kind of, look at me, I'm in my pants, I'm so sex positive sort of image. It's really quite disturbing. But then having listened, I took the album home last night and listened to the whole thing, and it's actually, that kind of runs through the whole album. She's pushing her strength, but at the same time, it's very personal and very much like, I can't believe how stupid I was, this happened to me. And, you know, she's not shying away from what happened to her. And so I've been thinking it over, and I think it's a good thing that she's being so open about it now, and that she will talk about it, and she's not kind of shying away from that, because Chris Brown has said that he thinks that she shouldn't be talking about it. I bet Chris Brown thinks she shouldn't be talking about it. I can see why she's done it in a way, but I also think there's something quite disturbing about it.
Well, as much as you and I could talk about this subject forever, we've got a Flaming Lips interview to listen to, because the eccentric Oklahoma band behind a staggering 12 albums, including Clouds, Taste Metallic and Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, were in London not so long ago to spread confetti all over the audience at the Troxy in East London. So we're going to hear a little bit about Wayne Coyne getting philosophical, but first, here is Convinced of the Hex from the band's latest album, Embryonic.
She submits as she dominates. She gets out of her head. As she talks to the ceiling, you can hear what she said. She said, that's the difference between us.
Talk about the latest album, because I was reading some reviews of it just before we came out.
I like how your eyebrow went up there when you said that.
Actually, one of the things that was said about the album was that it was ambitious.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And someone else said an abrupt change in direction. But I think my favourite one was Culture Bully summed it up as, Flaming Lips are getting weird again.
Well, I mean, I think when we do music, I mean, I don't hold back. And I know that can look like I'm ambitious. I mean, but with art and music and all that, you know, there really is nothing that stops you. I mean, to fail, if your ideas fail, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm not really curing cancer or anything. You know, they're just ideas. And I don't believe any music or any art really changes the world. I think it's just art. And if you want to change the world, you can do that if you want to. But the art and the music itself doesn't do that. So I don't ever feel like it's that big of a deal. So the word ambitious, I think, is a great thing to say about us, because I am trying, and I'll try anything. But I think it's mostly just because I'm, you know, I have a lot of energy.
Let's talk about Do You Realize?
Yes.
Being voted the official song of Oklahoma, which is quite amazing.
The state rock song.
State rock
yeah,
song.
Yeah. Well, we also have a state country song and a state folk song.
Nice.
So it's not the only one. Yeah. And we have an official state song, which is the Rodgers and Hammerstein Oklahoma, which, you know, goes, Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping. That's the state, official state song.
No.
So there's a state rock song now. Though not all states in America have rock songs. Oklahoma does. So we're the official state rock song. And I think, you know, in the very beginning of this, considering of what all these songs, you know, whose songs would be the one, I wasn't sure that we wanted to win or that we that would be a good thing. You know, I don't know why. I just thought, well, does that just sort of cheapen it or does that make it just too normal? Or, but the more I found out about it, the more I would talk to people about it, it seems perfect. I mean, when the governor read off his little summarizing of what the song, why the song Do You Realize is so perfect for Oklahoma, it made perfect sense. You know, because somehow it, I don't know if it's the only version of what the song could mean, but he implied that there's a realizing of the simple pleasures of life and realizing the things that are important and to make sure that you're aware of those before it's too late.
Well, it's funny because when it was announced, I did think, yeah, that is absurd, like you said. But yeah. At the same time, of all the Flaming Lips songs, that's the one that really seems to resonate with people.
Yeah, well, I think that's why, yeah. I mean, I think even well before any of that was conceived of, I mean, that song, I get letters every week and every show, someone will come up to me and talk about their death of their sister or their mother or something, or their wedding or the birth of their children or something they've connected this song to. And that's any songwriter, any group that has a song that does that. That's just the greatest thing ever. Because it goes beyond what your music. It's really, you know, they're taking your music and using it as some way to get through this thing or to give meaning to this thing. And that makes music really better than it is.
And it struck me when I thought about that, I thought about Do You Realize, and I thought about Are You a Hypnotist? And then the line, if you could blow up the world with a switch, would you do it? The Flaming Lips are a band with a lot of questions.
Yeah. Well, we're curious, I think. Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes there are just no answers, and there are things that you can't control, and you wish you could, or you wish you knew the answer, good or bad. You know, you speak, even the way I'm speaking even now, you know, I'm speaking at the front of my mind. I don't know what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it almost before I know what it is. But a lot of times with music, there are things that have been in your mind your whole life, and you're trying to figure out how to say them. And sometimes that collision happens, you know, where you're speaking with both at the same time, and that's what music does. You know, you're really asking a question, but it's really a question about yourself. That's the cheap way out, you know, because we're all capable, really, of the same things. The best things in the world, we're capable of those, but we don't do them very often. And the worst things in the world, whatever we hear about, if we read about something that some human has done somewhere, we know we're capable of that too. You know, and so I think I'm not just asking the question for me. I'm asking a question, you know, that everybody would probably ask if they got to write songs as much as I did or whatever. If you had to make records all the time, you'd do the same thing.
If we can work on the assumption that most intelligent bands, anyway, have a purpose, have a reason to exist. Mm. I mean, we've touched on it in this interview already, but what's the Flaming Lips, you know, reason to exist?
It wouldn't be anything other than I want it to. I mean, I don't think the world needs any more music, really. I mean, I think the world will always need living examples of people who are willing to say things, whether that's people writing novels or poems or music or making movies or anything, even being journalists. People like having a living person that just said this thing, and, you know, so you can be held accountable or they can see the way you look or whatever, you know. But I'm really doing it because I'm just obsessive and I think I want to do it. But I have no illusion that it should be important or anything. I do it because I'm a dumb artist, and if I don't do it, I feel I'll go insane. I probably wouldn't go insane, but to me, doing art is a little less hell than not doing art. So to me, anytime I go to do something, I know this is going to be money, and it's going to be time and energy, and it's just going to be stressful. But I know if I don't do it, it's worse. So I do it. And I just do it for me. But then as you go along, it has a lot of, you know, the other guys in the group, we all get to do this thing for our life. All of our families benefit from it if it goes good or whatever, you know. So those are little reasons, but there would be no big cosmic reasons. I mean, I would think of all the fans that like us. I mean, I know for certain if you like the Flaming Lips, there's tons of music out there that is of the same nourishment that if we weren't here, you would find that. And when anybody ever comes up to me and says, you know, the Flaming Lips saved my life, I would say, you know, I could say, yes, maybe that's true, but if we weren't here, you'd find some music that would, because you're searching and you're a curious person. That's why music can save your life. One thing that happens at a Flaming Lips show that I think is utter proof of a thing in the world that I think it's hard to know is there, is with this thing that I say, that you have the power to create your own happiness. And I'm saying that a lot to Flaming Lips fans who already are doing that. But when we put on a show, I mean, I'm really telling the audience, you know, you're gonna make this a big event, and we're not doing it. We have a lot of stuff up here, we're gonna turn on lights, and we're gonna play our songs or whatever. But this connection that we make, where we decide, this is gonna be a joyous, euphoric, exciting, big moment, we're doing that. It's not happening. You know, we know that if we don't do it, it doesn't happen. And that really is a great secret to know. And that's true of everything that you do in your life, you know. If this thing that you're walking into, if you don't try to make it good, it probably won't be good. I wish I could go.
That was Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips sending love out to the fans. The band's album Embryonic is out now. It's time for Singles Club, and let me first welcome culture editor Alex Needham back to the pod.
Thank you very much. Great to be back.
Your choice for Singles Club is Hot Chip. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had a gold disc from Hot Chip and someone took it? Is this what happened? Something happened?
I think it's still there. I got sent a gold disc for The Warning, slightly mysteriously, because I don't think I had any part in that album's success, although it was very nice to have. But it was hanging around the Culture Hub, which is our bit of the office, for ages. And I thought someone had nicked it, but I think they just moved it when they cleaned the carpet. I think it's still down there.
So you've been reunited with it?
We've been reunited, yeah.
With the gold disc, you don't know why you have.
Yeah, exactly. It's down by the wall like a bit like a good omen. So.
All right, well, this nothing to do with why you picked this latest song. This is Take It In by Hot Chip. Was Take It In, the first song from Hot Chip's fourth album, One Night Stand. Now, the Chip hardly need much introduction on this podcast, having been guests twice and no doubt featured on Singles Club more than once, so it just leaves Alex Needham to tell us why he brought this particular track in to us today.
Well, I'm quite excited about Hot Chip's new album. The third one, I wasn't quite as keen on as the second one. It was slightly, I remember the lead single off it, Ready For The Floor, sounded really kind of tinny. And there was a bit of a feeling that it was a bit too self-conscious and sort of pleased with itself. But I think this new song, which I don't know whether it'll be the first official single, but it's the first one that has been sort of released onto the internet. I just think it's a really good, strong kind of songwriting. There's a good contrast between the verse and the chorus. The verse has got this weird kind of dissonant bit that goes all the way through it, and then the chorus is really sort of uplifting in a kind of a bit of a New Order style. I don't know, I just like the way it's almost kind of classic, very English songwriting, but still with a bit of technological know-how and, you know, designed for kind of clubbing and having a good time. But as well, it's got this kind of lovely, plaintive, introspective quality. And I always find that a real, you know, that's just something I really enjoy always in pop.
I can appreciate the sentiments that some people felt about the last album being a bit up its own arse, I think is what a lot of people is what a lot of people thought. But I really liked it, and I think one of the things that I persistently find with Hot Chip that I'm always attracted to their music is that they seem to be interested in making music that's fun beyond anything else, actually, regardless of a lot of people thinking it takes itself a bit seriously, and moving in a new direction. That seems to be them. Even though this is quite retro, it's actually a new direction. Rebecca Nicholson, are you a fan?
I am a big fan of this. I think it's very warm. But also, it reminded me of a kind of dance remix of a 90s boy band, sort of, in the best possible way. And I don't mean that as an insult at all.
Boy bands are back. They're big.
Well, apparently
they're
so.
Really in.
But there is something quite retro about it. I think it borrows from every era. But I got that kind of 90s feel from it. But I thought it was great. Very warm and very, yeah, I loved it.
It's from Hot Chips' album One Life Stand, which isn't out until February, but this particular song is available to hear all over the internet. Next up on Singles Club, it's Stillness Is the Move by Solange Knowles. That was Stillness Is the Move, a cover version of the Dirty Projectors single from earlier this year. It is delivered by Solange Knowles. Yes, she is the sister of Beyoncé, with a bit of Dr. Dre's Explosive, which itself is a sample from Isaac Hayes' Bumpy's Lament. I hope you can get your head around all of those components. This is my choice. I've got a great, huge, big, massive girl crush on Solange Knowles, partly because I've thought that her quite recent album, Sol Angel and the Hadley Street Dreams, was a little underrated. It was very Supremes-esque and appeared to be this like bubbly, weightless pop, when actually I think there was a lot going on there, and she presented herself as quite an interesting person. And then she just sort of went under the radar. I heard that she has been or will be working with Grizzly Bear, which I thought was quite strange. And then there was a period earlier this year where she shaved her head. And so then this song comes out, and it's just like the latest instalment of my love for her, because she's taking the sample from the Dr. Dre song, which in itself is quite sort of typical gangster rap, misogynistic, got lots about it that's pretty offensive. And she's blended it with this very, you know, ethereal melody and turned it into something that I can almost imagine Erykah Badu doing when she did Baduism in the early 2000s. Just sounds fantastic. And also, you know, I didn't really hear the Stillness Is the Move single, which I think we had on Singles Club when Dirty Projectors put it out a while ago. I really liked also, but never really picked up on the lyrics that much, which her vocal ability really, really brings out in this record. I really like this in particular, and it just makes me think she could be capable of something really interesting also in the future. Rebecca, do you like?
Yes, I second the Solange love. I do like this. And it's funny because with Dirty Projectors, they never quite clicked for me. And I read lots of things about them being heavily influenced by R&B, and I couldn't hear it. But funnily enough, after listening to this and then going back and listening to the original, I got it. I understood what they were doing. I think I actually prefer this to their version, but I now like their version, whereas before it didn't. Maybe it didn't sink in, I don't know. But yeah, I love Solange. I love her.
Alex, you love her?
I think it's great that Beyoncé has got a sort of a slightly indie younger sibling. And I did like this. It did take me back to the original. I'd sort of listened to Dirty Projectors' album and found it kind of impenetrable and not listened to them again. But having gone back to their version, I think I do slightly prefer theirs. Funnily enough, I think it's got a bit more clarity than hers has. It's in a way a kind of a slightly more radical take on R&B, because theirs is super stripped down. It's just drums and a guitar. Whereas I see what you mean about kind of recontextualising that sample, but at the same time, it is a noise that you've sort of heard before. I mean, I think she sings it beautifully. I just think it's a little bit more, bland than the Dirty Projectors version.
Okay, mixed reception for Solange Knowles there, but that is Stillness Is a Move. No release date as yet, but you can yet again hear it all over the internet if you search for the appropriate terms. Final song on Singles Club this week is this is Leaky Lee with Possibility. All I wanted is gonna be yours there. All I wanted is gonna be yours there. So tell me when you hear my heart stop. You're the only one I know. Tell me when you hear my silence. That was Possibility by Leaky Lee, another former guest who we had on the show following the release of her brilliant single A Little Bit a while back. The 23-year-old Swede is currently working on her second album, but this song is taken from the brand new Twilight film soundtrack for New Moon, which hit cinemas really recently, and Rebecca Nicholson was there to see it. I'm making you out to be this like teeny bop fan.
No, I think I did actually see it the day after it came out, but it was a coincidence. I wasn't queuing up
because you couldn't get into the first one because it was shut.
Well, I read an interview with Leaky Lee, and she said that she wrote this specific. They asked her to write it for a specific scene. And so I went to see the film and saw the scene that it was written for, and it's obviously very moody and emo and emotional. I quite like that it's emo without being an emo song. But the scene is brilliant because it has Bella, the main girl, in it, and she's very depressed about something that's happened, and she's sitting staring out of her window, and they've tried to convey that this goes on for a very long time by the seasons changing outside. So you have leaves falling off the trees, and then snow, and this song plays in the background, and it actually works really well. But they've lost confidence in the scene because they then have put subtitles of the month over the top of this very mood. And so it's like October, November. But I'd heard the song before I went to see the film and liked it, and I actually think it serves its purpose very well in the film as well.
I agree with you on that note. On the one hand, it could be a Coldplay song. On the other hand, I think if you're going to appreciate anything to do with the Twilight trilogy or anything like that, you have to appreciate that it is a totally contrived piece of art. And in the same way that this song is all about, you know, ticking certain emotional boxes,
yeah,
if you just let it happen to you and you don't sort of challenge whether that's a good thing or not, it definitely serves its purpose. And I did feel myself getting carried away with some kind of unspecified melancholy when I was listening to it earlier. Alex, what do you think of this?
Well, I suppose it's progress in a way, isn't it? Because when you think about how massive Twilight is, the kind of equivalent 10 years ago would be Titanic, which obviously had Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On as the big song. So this is definitely a much more indie version of that. I mean, I thought it was, you know, musically, I thought it was a bit like a more pop kind of Cowboy Junkies. And I did like it. It's sort of, yeah, it does kind of build to something, and it is quite anthemic, and it's not the obvious thing for her to do because she was a bit more of an electronic pop star before. But I think to get the full effect, you do need R. Patsy's involvement.
The original soundtrack to New Moon, from which Possibility by Leaky Lee is taken, is out right now. You can just buy it. You don't even have to look for it on the internet. Just like these other singles which are out now. Animal Collective, Fool Be Kind. I'm finally free. Flow Rider featuring Akon, Available. I'm so available. I don't know if I can face it again. Can't stop now. I've tried. Mariah Carey, I Want to Know What Love Is. Taylor Swift, 15. Well, that was your montage, and that was Singles Club, which means it's time for me to say goodbye to Alex Needham.
Bye, it was a pleasure.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Cheers.
Time for some feedback now on last week's show with guests Everything Everything and Gonzalez, who prompted Santos L. Halper to comment, "So this week's pod was an arrogant special, eh? Perhaps the next one could feature Gene Simmons. Good work all round, nonetheless."
And EJD thinks, "The drum single is average, but their song Let's Go Surfing was brilliant, a late summer classic." And Trailer simply said, "Awesome. C-G, C-G, C-G."
I was hoping you would sing that.
I know, I don't know where I'd start.
Now on Music Weekly, Fright and Rabbit were in the studio earlier this week to talk to Paul McInnes about their ever-expanding lineup and how they found success in America when it eludes them in the UK. But before we hear from the Rabbits, Scott and Gordon, here is an exclusive live track recorded just for us. This is Swim Until You Can't See Land.
I salute at the threshold of the North Sea of my mind, and the nod to the board and that drove me here to face the tide and swim. I swam, I swam. Dip a toe in the ocean, oh how it hardens and then numbs. The rest of me is a version of man built to collapse and crumb. If I hadn't come now to the coast to disappear, I may have died in a landslide of rocks, hopes, and fear. So swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Are you a man? Are you a bag of sand? Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see. Swim till you can't see land. Are you a man? Are you a bag of sand? Up to my knees now. Do we do or die? Oh, the sea has seen my life before, though it's my first, perhaps last time. Let's call me a Baptist, call this a drowning of the past. She is there on the shoreline, throwing stones at my back. So swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Are you a man? Are you a bag of sand? Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see. Swim till you can't see land. Are you a man? Are you a bag of sand? Now the water is taller than me, and the land is a marker line. All I am is a body adrift in water, salt and sky. So swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Are you a man? Are you a bag of sand? Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Swim till you can't see land. Can't see land, swim. Until you can't see land, swim.
Did you have to be on tour as a band for quite prolonged periods of time? Do you, how in an average year, what percentage of it will be on tour?
I'm gonna say about 2/3. This year was kind of off album cycle, and it was still 2/3. And then next year is going to be on album cycle, so I'm thinking like 3/4. But then, what else would I be doing, I suppose?
Well, so, sitting at home having creative thoughts, coming up with winning melodies, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to do that too often. I kind of do that in chunks as well. So once we get off tour, I'll set aside a block of time for doing that creative stuff, and the rest of the time is completely dedicated to stupidity.
I was vacuum packed, shrink wrapped out of air, and the spine collapsed and the eyes rolled back to stare at my starving brain.
I'd just like to kind of, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the Frightened Rabbit story, I'd like to kind of go way back into time. And Frightened Rabbit was originally just you, Scott.
Yeah. I was a big fan of Badly Drawn Boy. I was trying to set myself up as that kind of figure. I was even wearing a woolly hat a lot at that point in time. It was too far. So I called myself Frightened Rabbit, but then realised no one was interested. So gradually, the more people I've brought on, the more people that have actually become interested. It's been one member per year since the year 2004.
So 2003 was solo year?
2004 was solo.
Right.
2003 was Ground Zero.
Zero?
Yeah.
This was just the gestation.
Yeah, it was. It was a single cell in my body.
And how did you, when you, this, I mean, a lot of bands that say we kind of interview on this podcast, they kind of seem to explode from nowhere. You know, they form 6 months later, they've got a deal, and then another 9 months later, the album's out. And obviously, you know, this is into your second half of your first decade. How was that initial period? I mean, how did you make ends meet?
There was some fairly dull jobs. Because you go through them fairly rapidly, because it's the trouble is finding an employer who's willing to put up with you basically not being available most of the time. It's difficult to find, but you have to find an employer who's like maybe a little bit, maybe regret something about their own past, and then feels like they're able to give you this chance to do what they never did. And then they give you sort of lots of time off when you need it. And that's the key, I think, is find a good boss. You can do it. And if you don't have one, then you just have to keep quitting and quitting and quitting. The initial period, it's rubbish. For us, anyway, it's like full of more downs than ups. But as long as you can sort of envisage a future where that's not the case, then I think it's worth going on.
And is that what it was that kept you going? Because, I mean, I could imagine that it must be quite easy to think, oh, well, you know, maybe now I should just kind of,
yeah,
people, everybody hates me and I should just give up.
No, I was completely deluded. And still
that,
am.
That is beautiful. I really love Swim Until You Can't See Land. Is this this is the first thing off the new album, and is this representative of the sound we can look forward to hearing?
I think it's a good way in. It's definitely a good sort of, it's definitely one of the songs that bridges the gap between the last album and this one, and then there's slightly more left of centre songs on the record. So, but I think as an introduction, it's a good one. It's got the strings. We've got a few tracks with strings, and I just think that, you know, the production values on it are perhaps what you can expect from it. But again, it does sort of provide the bridge between the two, and I think that's why we chose it to be first.
And it numbs. The rest of me is a version of mine built to collapse and crumb. And if I hadn't come now to the coast to disappear.
And in terms of production values and stuff and recording this album, were you able to tap into resources that you hadn't had access to previously?
Yeah, we had a lot more time. That was the main thing. The last one's just, it's not full of mistakes, but it's full of holes that I, you know, wanted to fill, so to speak. And the goal with this one was to not have that. So we did have access to a guy who arranged strings. He's actually he's a German who's on our label called Hauschka, and he did a fantastic job doing that. And it was just a case of, I mean, time's the main thing. that to give a band that is basically total freedom, which is all I want, really. So it was a total pleasure.
I'd like to ask you finally. I'm sure it's something that everybody asks you, and this is the dichotomy of the growing in the UK but big in America thing.
Mm.
How is America right now for you?
Welcoming, totally welcoming. The level of excitement is a lot higher over there for some reason. It's not that actually any more people coming out to the shows. They're just so glad that you're there in some ways. So it's catching up. It's evening up. But a lot of places, the Americans don't really have the same, and I'm generalising, but I have to, like, they don't really, as a group, have the same level of inhibition when it comes to looking like an idiot. And that can make them look like an idiot, but it can also make them really great because they don't hide what they're thinking or feeling at that point in time. And as a band touring there, you get a genuine reaction, and sometimes you get a slightly over the top one, which is a bit gushy. But they're fantastic for that, and they make, you know, an American tour can make my year all worthwhile because they're just so nice.
Yeah. Do you get kind of people who are, you know, speaking broad Bronx drawls and claim to be Scottish?
Everyone's Scottish, aren't they? Yeah. And over there, we've just been over there pumping like mad, and it would seem giving them our terrible genes. I feel like
I just died twice. That was Scott and Gordon from Frightened Rabbit talking to Paul McInnes and performing Swim Until You Can't See Land. The song is taken from the band's forthcoming album, The Winter of Mixed Drinks, which is out in March, but you can hear it at myspace.com/frightenedrabbit. Now, back in 1989, Mark Sandman and Dana Coley formed a rock band in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Their name was Morphine, and Davith Goth has the lowdown in this week's Feature With No Name.
Morphine were a pioneering power trio that fused elements from blues, rock and jazz to create a sound that was wholly their own. With a lineup featuring bass, baritone sax and drums, they could swing just as well as they could rock out.
Got to the driver of my car, past the dogs, past the guards, and all of my alarms, supposed to be so state of the art.
Formed in 1989 by multi-instrumentalist Mark Sandman and saxophonist Dana Colley, Morphine developed a devoted following during the 10 years they were together. Though only an underground success at the time, they have since achieved cult status as one of the most innovative bands of the 90s, their stripped-back sound laying the foundations for the White Stripes and C6 Steve. I first encountered Morphine in 1995 on the short-lived Channel 4 show The White Room. I was gripped by the sound Sandman was getting out of his bass, and stunned by the sight of Colley playing two saxophones at the same time. The track they were tearing through was called Honey White.
Honey White made a deal for some angel food. Honey White, everybody told her it was sweet and good.
Morphine's unusual sound can be partly attributed to Sandman's abilities as an inventor of musical instruments. Inspired by the blues guitarists of the Mississippi Delta, he designed his own two-string slide bass, which he deployed to devastating effect, conjuring deep and distorted tones that he described as low rock. But despite this singular approach, Morphine's music seemed strangely familiar, perhaps because it had such immediate impact. Their songs were instantly melodic, boasting riffs that bury themselves into your brain, like the irresistibly infectious Buena. Sandman's languid, laid-back vocals have been described as beat noir, a blend of stream-of-consciousness poetry and hard-boiled narrative, like the crime fiction of Jim Thompson and James Ellroy filtered through Jack Kerouac. In his typical deadpan delivery, Sandman would tell stories set in a seedy underworld of motels, pool houses and dive bars, while Collie's smooth and sultry sax completed this wonderfully woozy vision. After releasing five albums, Morphine came to a tragic end in 1999 when Sandman, aged just 46, collapsed on stage in Italy and died of a heart attack. In July this year, on the 10th anniversary of his death, the surviving members of Morphine celebrated Sandman's extraordinary talent by reuniting for a tribute concert at the venue where he died. Though he is no longer with us, Sandman's spirit remains very much alive in the music of this remarkable band.
That was David Goff, sub-editor for guardian.co.uk/music, and he was talking about the band Morphine, which brings us to the end of this week's show. Thank you, Rebecca Nicholson,
thank
for joining
you.
Us to talk
thank
about
you very much.
Rihanna and all sorts. I promise, every time you come on this show, I'm going to use your full name every time I refer to you, just in case
you
people
You just
think,
do it in conversation.
Yeah. I know, yeah, people don't know that, but that's just how we
that's
speak
true.
To each other. Okay, well, that definitely brings us to the end of this week's show. Never fear, because Paul McInnes will be back next Friday. But until then, listeners, I hope you enjoyed the show and see you next week.